And the time is 6 a.m.
This is CKUW 95.9 FM, streaming at ckuw.ca. We hope you've enjoyed listening to us and stay tuned. CKUW is managed by the Winnipeg Campus Community Radio Society in accordance with the CRTC and Industry Canada rules and regulations. As a not-for-profit radio station, CKUW is a member of the National Campus Community Radio Association and adheres to their statement of principles to provide an alternative voice. CKUW operates on a frequency of 95.9 megahertz on the FM band with 450 watts effective radiated power, or ERP. Our transmitter is located at 7 Evergreen Place in Osborne Village. Programming originates from our downtown studios at the University of Winnipeg in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. We would like to hear from you and welcome your ideas to improve listening, which will be heard on CKUW in years to come. Address your comments and suggestions to CKUW 95.9 FM, Room 4CM11, 515 Portage Avenue, Winnipeg, Manitoba, R3B2E9. You can also call 204-786-9782 or email us at ckuw@uwinnipeg.ca. This is Robin Erickson speaking for the board, staff, and volunteers of CKUW 95.9 FM. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for more great community radio.
CKUW 95.9 FM broadcasts from the University of Winnipeg, located on Treaty 1 territory and the national homeland of the Red River Métis in Winnebuck, Manitowabi. We acknowledge these are the ancestral lands of the Anishinaabeg, Anishininu, Aninuak, Nahethoak, Ocheti Shikoe, Dakota Oyate, and Métis people. This territory is also a place of significance for the Dene and Inuit. We acknowledge that our water is sourced from Shoal Lake 40 First Nation in Treaty 3 territory, and that most of our hydroelectricity comes from Treaty 5 territory in northern Manitoba. As a community-driven, not-for-profit organization, CKUW 95.9 FM strives to respect, value, and incorporate Indigenous knowledge and perspectives into our programming and organization in the spirit of truth and reconciliation. Remembering the original spirit and intent of the treaties, we recognize that the work of reconciliation is ongoing.
Good morning, friends. I'm Ron Robinson.
And I'm Carol.
We are the Saturday Morning Show.
I'm back with my sort of,
yes,
part of my voice.
Yes, part of Carol's voice has joined us today. It's a miracle. Of course, cough candy's help. This half hour, Carol, well, it was on the roof. Carol, put on your parka and your long johns, etc. We go looking.
I'll check the weather first.
Is that an ancient radio wave I see before me? As well, we've got little Lenny Bro and his father. Yes. As well, oh, your easy listening hit parade. Well, many versions done of this tune. We'll see. Well, I suppose the first thing you think about is the weather. But if it's too early for that, we can at least anecdotally tell you it's unpleasant.
It's but a little...
For this time of year.
There.
Yeah. We dressed accordingly. Layers. What's your approach? Layers?
Yes.
Yeah.
Especially around my neck and throat right now.
Yes.
Do you want to know the temperature?
Well, all right. No. Let's get to it.
Minus?
22?
24.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like.
Yes. Barometric pressure, 101.7 and rising. Humidity, 78%. Wind coming from the west-northwest at 13. And altogether, that gives you a wind chill of minus 34. It's going to be sunny today, though.
Excellent.
That's what we can count on here in the prairies.
That's why we live here.
It's the only reason.
Wiping it down, no, boss.
Okay, not the only reason. Wind up to 15 kilometers a high. of minus 17 today, but the wind chill, minus 33 this morning, minus 24 this afternoon, and a risk of frostbite.
You have been warned.
Yes.
I'm looking at the sports, and I spy my little eye, the NHL. Now, I watched most of this game. Buffalo Sabres came to Winnipeg yesterday to play the Jets, and they've been on a downward slide, I must say. Bartender, make it. Anyway.
You kept coming to me and reporting
yes,
on
this just
somebody
did.
Scored.
Well, the Jets were on it right from the opening round. Jets won it going away 4-1 with Eric Comrie in the net, and I think two goals scored by the fourth line, which is long overdue. You can't count on the same men for the entire season, you know. Sunday, the Jets and the Oilers at 9 p.m. The American Hockey League, the Manitoba Moose, play the Iowa Wild. That's tonight at 6. In the Professional Women's Hockey League, New York and Vancouver today at 2. Sunday, Minnesota and Boston at 11 a.m. Now, the Belfast Giants. Now, this is from last Saturday. They had a 40-minute delay for a plexiglass repair. Uh-oh. So they had a 4-3 shootout win in Glasgow. Do you see what I did there?
Oh, very
yes,
funny.
Thank you. CFL, 39-year-old, I said 39-year-old quarterback Trevor Harris has signed a one-year extension with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. I get a bonus if he doesn't have to use a Zimmer frame during the next season.
Okay.
Yeah. All's quiet, perhaps too quiet. That's a headline from the Winnipeg Sun on the Winnipeg Blue Bomber free agent front. In other words, they haven't signed some of the people that we need to sign. There's only so much money in the pot, boys. I'll leave that for another day. Soccer, Vancouver Whitecaps. This has taken years. Play the Inter-Miami in Florida today. It's the Major League Soccer Championship match. I don't know if they've ever been there before. I don't think so. World Cup, I see Canada will play Qatar. Is that not right, Carol?
That's right.
And Switzerland. Qatar was the first team out in the last World Cup. That's what we're looking for.
Because have we ever scored a goal in the World Cup or
well,
not
they
in the last while?
We're going to this
something.
Time. Yeah, okay. I'm making a prediction now.
Against Qatar.
Yes.
Okay.
The Free Press, the World Cup draw. This is how we happen to know what Canada is playing, and mostly. Free Press, in today's Free Press, has a headline, World Cup draw, loathsome and repugnant.
Oh.
Yes, well, the Orange Menace was there, don't you remember?
Oh, yeah, well,
thing,
that
yes.
part was certainly loathsome.
Whatever FIFA
and,
was,
repugnant.
It's something else now. I never liked it as it was. 6:07, music then? Yes, from your Easy Listening Hit Parade. And it's Moonlight and Roses, brackets, bring memories of you. Most of pop's invasion of the classics is focused on works of celebrated composers. And the BBC, you may remember, took note. That's it, you're not playing that. You can't abuse classical music for pop. But in this case, Moonlight and Roses came from a far less well-known source. Edwin Lemaire held various organ posts, published some 200 pieces. One of them, written in 1892, the Andantino in D-flat, which had a soaring melody, used 33 years later by Ben Black and Neil Murray to carry the poem Moonlight and Roses. Now, it's been through many transformations, shall we put it that way? So this morning, the three sons kicking around.
Okay. Thank you.
up the music, as Jimmy Durante would say. There's a minute and a half left of that. Good Lord.
Is that all you could take?
Well, it sounds like they're rehearsing. It sounds like he's learning how to play it.
It Good sounds Lord. Like, I forget the name of the guy that did the popcorn.
Yes,
sounds like he got his idea from this guy.
Could well be. It's as if there's no computer involved there, but it's as if it's almost machine made.
Could be.
Moonlight and Roses, The Three Sons. Lots of people have had a go at it, popularized by Lanny Ross, a radio singer from the 1930s and 40s, used it as a theme. Song has proved suitable, see, for many singers, from barbershop quartets to The Three Sons, who perform it. Here, I'm crossing off the word perform for future reference notes. All right. 6:11. Now, why don't we have a choir? Oh, yes. I should tell you, though, yes. On this day.
Yes.
In 1933, the ban on Ulysses, James Joyce's novel, was lifted in the U.S. Didn't realize it was that early. Yes.
Yeah.
It viewed as naughty up till that, I suppose.
Well, yeah, and incomprehensible.
Yes. That's an excuse for banning a book? Good Lord.
I have no
idea.
Then
there should be lots of books. On this day in 1994, Maltese Falcon auctioned for... I think there were two of them, actually. One of them was dropped on Bogart's foot, I know.
200,000.
398,590. I have no idea what it's selling for now, mind you. And I was going to play some of the music from that, but we've so many things to do. I would just tell you about that. You can hum along if you remember some of the theme music yourself. Now, we promised a choir.
Yes.
We're always looking for choir music that could encourage us. Yes?
Okay.
Right. Song, keep your eye upon the dollar and your hand upon the wheel.
It turned out it did sound like a choir.
Exactly. We're going to need a lot more male voices if we want to sing that in our choir.
Yeah,
I thought the ladies could applaud and clap along. The Altos could do something with that, I'm sure. Male choral ensemble composed of former and working coal miners from Cape Breton Island, Nova Scotia. Choir requires each member to have at least 2 years experience working in or around a coal mine. After all, it's 2025. They are the only choir where the second requirement is to sing. There you go.
First requirement, be a coal miner.
Coal miner, yep. Formed in 1966, traditional settler music, folklore, the Canadian Maritimes. So only one member had been with the group since its inception, Jim McClellan, who's retiring at the end of 2025. Good thing we played it then when we did.
Right.
From the CD, Coal Fire in Winter.
How old do you think? In his 80s?
It's hard to tell with all that coal dust on him. You can't tell by looking at it. I don't know if it softens the skin or toughens up. It looks like leather. That man looks like leather. Yes. Well, I don't see what year this came out. All right. 6:16. We're going to stay in Canada. We're going to Prince Edward Island now, I think.
Oh, okay.
And sort of a country sound. And then I'll tell you why.
Okay.
They talk about Texas, Kentucky, and Maine. They talk about London, Paris, and Spain. But there's a little island I long there to be. Prince Edward Island is heaven to me. The shores are so pretty, the fields are so green, the roads are so winding with such pretty scenes. The air is so pure and the people so gay. Prince Edward Island, I'm coming to stay. Swimming and hunting and fishing galore. The sun shines so bright on its long golden shore. The Lord made this island for all men to see. Prince Edward Island is heaven to me. Folks, there are 10 provinces in the Dominion of Canada, each beautiful in its own respect, such as British Columbia, Quebec, Alberta, Newfoundland, New Brunswick, Manitoba, Nova Scotia, Ontario, and Saskatchewan. But Prince Edward Island to me is the one. The soil is so fertile, so rich and so rare. It yields such potatoes which none can compare. The tourist are welcome to walk its red soil, for farmers are happy to work and to toil. There's thousands of islands in this land of ours, like dots in the ocean or two on the flowers. A touch of God's great hand this island must be. Prince Edward Island is heaven to me.
Nothing says Canada like a man mispronouncing some of the names of the provinces and the steel guitar, which always makes me think Hawaii. Hal right. Lone Pine.
Yes.
His real name was Harold John Bro. Known professionally as Hal Lone Pine, American-Canadian country singer. He was born in Peacock, Maine, but he married French-Canadian wife Betty Cody.
Okay.
1938, with whom he performed. Pair moved to New Brunswick and eventually to Winnipeg, where he performed a regular CKY radio show, scored hit singles, including It's Goodbye and So Long to You and The Trail of the Lonesome Pine, one of my mom's faves, I think. And, of course, we know him for his son.
Well, is it his son? Like the is he the composer?
Lenny Bro?
No. The one we just played.
Oh, I think that's a traditional song. I don't think he gets credit for.
Oh, we gave him credit for it.
Well, somebody had to. Let's hear Lenny.
Lenny.
like you've been listening to The Three Sons. Lenny Bro with Lenny's Western Blues from the CD The Hallmark Sessions, which were recorded in Toronto on November 28, 1961. Rick Danko on acoustic bass and Levon Helm on drums. At 6:23, boy, we're late. Let's, Carol, jump on your chair. There's a right. I'll hand you up. All you need is a toque. You'll be fine. No, you'll be fine. Thank you. Looking. Searching the heavens. Come in, heavens.
Jack McLean's story of the landing at D-Day and subsequent events. During World War II, my father, Jack McLean, was a member of the Royal Winnipeg Rifle Regiment. They were among the assault troops at Juno Beach on D-Day. I was fortunate enough to meet some of the survivors over the years, and they shared with me some of their stories, especially Jim Beige and Colonel Lockie Fulton, Don James, Alex Cuppers, and Albert Cook. These are some of the men who faced the enemy. I couldn't get the other stories because those ones were gone. Sometimes on Remembrance Day, it's hard to get your mind around more than 100,000 Canadians killed in various kinds of war actions since the beginning of Canada. But on Remembrance Day, if you could just remember one person, it would make it more personal and perhaps make it more real for you. So in these stories, you'll learn some of the names that you may want to remember. Jack McLean's story of the D-Day landing and subsequent events. In early May, right near the beginning of the month, the Allies amassed a huge invasion force at a big camp in southern England. The camp was well guarded to maintain secrecy. Among the Canadian contingent was the Royal Winnipeg Rifle Regiment, and in it was Corporal Jack McLean. The purpose of the gathering in the camp was to brief the men for the coming invasion. There were daily training sessions with maps of the coastline and inland objectives. There were three-dimensional photographs of the beach, although no one told them what beaches they would be coming to. Between the training sessions, the men spent their time cleaning and repairing or replacing equipment so that everything was perfect for the big event. In early June, they were loaded into trucks and taken down to the port of Southampton. They were very excited to be on the move, feeling highly trained, and too young to spend much time thinking of their own mortality. The port of Southampton was a bustle with the movement of vehicles, men, and material. When they left the trucks, they were immediately loaded onto their ships, and on that night they slept aboard ship. The following morning, they moved out into the channel. But it was an extremely stormy, blustery day, and the seas were prohibitively high for an invasion. So they decided to postpone for a bit clearer weather. They had a very limited window of time during the dark of the moon, or they would lose the chance to invade, and if they waited a month, they would lose secrecy. So the following morning, at 0330 hours, June 6th, the men were awakened on the ships and given breakfast. This was followed by a prayer meeting, and after that, they listened to an address from General Eisenhower, Supreme Commander of the Invasion Forces. As dawn came, they were loaded into the landing craft, which were then lowered into the water. These were small boats with a flat front end that could drop down to form a ramp. The three sections of a platoon were in each landing craft, seated in three rows, two down each side and one down the middle. The little boats were quite small for the kinds of seas they were in, and they tossed about so that many of the men became very seasick. One moment, they'd be below a crest that was towering 6-8 feet above them, and the next minute they'd be at the top of such a crest. And as far as the eye could see, on either side of them and around them, there were ships of every size, shape, and description, and bombardment going overhead toward the beaches. It was the biggest invasion in the history of the world, and they were right in it. As the landing craft powered in toward the beaches, they were under very heavy fire. The Allied bombardment had failed to take out any of the bunkers on that section of Juno Beach. The landing craft hit bottom quite far out because the tide was out, so it was a long distance in, wading through water to get to the sand. The ramp dropped down and the three sections ran out, but after just a few feet of knee-deep water that was slowing them down, they were suddenly in a trough where they sunk chest high. They were wearing Mae West's flotation jackets, and the water and the Mae West's were slowing them still more. They had to hold their weapons high above the water. But Jack McLean was a tall man with long legs, and he soon felt bottom and began to speed up, passing the rest of the platoon. When he finally got to shore, he was nearly exhausted. And just at that, he saw Andrew Matey, another tall member of the platoon, come up beside him. And even as he noticed him, a bullet hit Matey and he fell down wounded. That took away the sense of exhaustion. In front of them was the next obstacle, the concertina wire. Rolls of barbed wire stretched out, about 2 feet high and 20 to 30 feet across. Every platoon had a Bangalore torpedo. This was an explosive device shaped like a number of interlocking pipes that could be fixed together and then pushed under the wire or laid over it to blow it up and create a path. Their Bangalore torpedo man was killed in the water. They had to get through it as best they could. He was about halfway through the barbed wire when a blast behind him threw him face down into it, rendering him unconscious briefly. Perhaps a few seconds, he doesn't know how long. But when he came to, the rest of the platoon that were still alive had made it through the wire and into the dunes. Beside his face, there were bits of bloody fabric and debris, and he thought, maybe my legs are gone. But he looked back, and his legs were still there. However, behind him lay one of his friends, and his legs were missing. Up in the dunes, his good friend Wheeler Graham had taken shelter in a shell hole, and he called out, "There's room if you can come." So he untangled his gear, gathered his legs up under him, jumped up and ran. He could run. Track was his sport. When he reached the shell hole, he threw in his rifle and jumped in after it. And his bayonet struck him just at the edge of his jawline near his throat. It bled and he thought he'd killed himself, but it turned out to be minor.
Ancient radio waves that go on forever. From something called Story Save, Voices of Canada Storytellers, Marie-Anne McLean, Stories from the Prairies. Well, in this case, her father had the D-Day landing at 6:31. Turner Classic Movie Channel. Each week, we take a look at what's coming on. I Spy with My Little Eye. 11 a.m. this morning, Swing High, Swing Low from 1937. Carol Lombard, Fred McMurray, Dorothy L'Amour. The band leader could lose everything when success goes to his head. 1 p.m. It happened on Fifth Avenue, one of me faves.
Yes. What time?
1 o'clock today. Don DeFore, Anne Harding, Gail Storm, and Victor Moore is really the heart of it. Two homeless men move into an empty mansion. Yes, and the rest follows. It's just after the war, of course, yes. 9 p.m. tonight, The Scarlet Empress, 1934, directed by Joseph von Sternberg, marching around his leather boots. Marlene Dietrich, looking ferocious. Life and Loves of the Hollywood Style of Catherine the Great. That's the Hollywood view of it, anyways. Sunday, You Hear Behind Me, Broadway Melody from 1940. This was the fourth and finally did a lot of these. Broadway Melody, anyways, 1940 was the last one. What we're hearing is Begin the Beguine. Fred Astaire, Eleanor Powell, George Murphy as well. 7 o'clock Sunday night. I'll repeat that. 7 o'clock Sunday night. Christmas in Connecticut. Barbara Stanwyck, Dennis Morgan, Sydney Greenstreet. I'm Sydney Greenstreet. Yes. The headline would read, Fraud Fakes Farm Fable. Yes, exactly. It's 9 p.m. A Christmas. Night to remember. Ooh, Titanic.
Oh, yes.
Ooh, yep. 1958, Kenneth Moore, Honor Blackman, Put On Your Life Jacket, and a young David McCallum. Anyways, from the movie, Broadway Melody of 1940, Begin the Begin.
Let it sleep like the dead desire, I only remember when they begin.
At 6:34, that was the Turner Classic Movie Channels. Carol McKibben, what was that temperature again?
It was minus 24, actually.
Yikes.
Yeah.
The lamp is burning low upon my tabletop. The snow is softly falling. The air is still in the silence of my room. I hear your voice softly calling. If I could only have you near to breathe a sigh or two, I would be happy just to hold the hands I love on this winter night with you. The smoke is rising in the shadows overhead. My glass is almost empty. I read again between the lines upon the page the words of love you sent me. If I could know within my heart that you were lonely too, I would be happy just to hold the hands I love on this winter night with you. Fire is dying now, my lamp is growing dim. The shades of night are lifting. The morning light steals across my window pane, where webs of snow are drifting. If I could only have you near to breathe a sigh or two, I would be happy just to hold the hands I love and to be once again with you. To be once again with you.
Right. Gordon Lightfoot wants to hold your hand outside when it's minus 24. Is that right?
Something along those lines.
He's nuts. He's nuts. he's nuts.
That's a little excessive, perhaps, but
he could hold your hand in a mitten.
We sing that in our choir.
We do sing.
We
that
do
in
a
our
decent
choir.
Job of it.
Yes, we don't do those oohs at the end.
No,
but yep.
No, if there was oozo, I'd be prepared.
You'd be encouraged.
6:37.
Right. Yeah.
And the Free Press.
I suggested that song last spring.
There you go. Here we are, singing it. Yeah. Looking at the Free Press book pages, yes, we got our paper today. We the Raptors, 30 players, 30 stories, 30 years. Eric Smith and Andrew Bricker reviewed by Douglas J. Johnston, who says, with all due deference to Winnipeg Sea Bears, the NBA's Toronto Raptors is Canada's team when it comes to professional basketball. So we say 2025, 30th anniversary, longtime Raptors game radio broadcaster Eric Smith and Ghent University English professor Andrew Bricker have penned a book of backstories to celebrate that mark in the team's history. As celebrations go, it's not terribly moving. That's the second paragraph. All right, moving right along then to below that, an unpleasant but worth telling, Nobody's Girl, a memoir of surviving abuse and fighting for justice by Virginia Robert Giffrey, who died, of course, in, I guess, April, was it? April 2025. Sexual trafficking survivor central to exposing elite abusers Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. So the review concludes with full-throated cry for an end to the trauma-inducing crime of sexual trafficking. And if it is that, and it may have died in April, she may have died, but her awe-inspiring spirit and hunger for justice live on in this unforgettable and important book, says Jess Wolford, who reads and writes in Winnipeg and beyond. And as well, now there's a new William Boyd. And big reputation, Hello Ireland, William Boyd's work often explores how one individual's life can intersect with big historical events. Alison Gilmore has reviewed The Predicament. British writer William Boyd, Booker Prize-nominated literary novelist, knack for pacey, persuasive storytelling. In The Predicament, a 1960s set tale of reluctant MI6 spy Gabriel Dax, he supplies his usual textured descriptive prose, but struggles to deliver a compelling and cohesive plot.
Oh dear.
Well, moving right along, in Ben Sigurdson's column, Manitoba Writers Guild, 4th Annual Dave Williamson National Short Story Competition, now open for entries, named, of course, after local author and Free Press reviewer Dave Williamson. So, between 2,500 and 4,500 words, one. It was a dark and stormy night. I'm off, Carol. I'm off to a good start.
Okay, we'll see.
That's a different contest, actually. Mm-hmm. First prize, top award, $1,000. More information, submission guidelines, how to enter. You've got to submissions until February 15th, but it's cheaper if you get on it early. All right. Information, wfp.to, that's Winnipeg Free Press, of course, wfp.to/Dave Award. Doesn't get any simpler than that, does it? There you go. Canadian publisher of books about the beloved Franklin the Turtle, the creation of Paulette Bourgeois, has condemned incendiary social media post by U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, who featured a violent likeness of the typically gentle school-age reptile. And so it's impressive that the Canadian publisher was quick to respond.
Yes, I saw that cartoon.
You want to be quick to respond, even though it's a turtle, if you get my drift.
Yeah, very funny. Yeah, okay, got
Kids
it.
Can Press posted a note saying, quote, strongly condemn any denigrating, violent, or unauthorized use of Franklin's name or image, noting Franklin stands for kindness, empathy, and inclusivity.
Yes.
Oh, new Louise Penny.
Right.
Back with Inspector Gamache, The Black Wolf.
Right.
Reviewed by Andrea Geary. Many twists and turns. Sure to please Penny's legion of fans, as well as those who appreciate a satisfying read on a winter's night. That's exactly what we're looking for. And I see Dave Williamson has a review as well of John Updike's Selected Letters. Good thing, because it's already 912 pages, Dave. If you're a John Updike fan, you're going to want to know that. At 6:42, what instrument always makes you smile, Carol, and warms the heart, eh?
Well, I guess I'd have to say, like a flute. Something like that?
Right. Thanks very much, Carol. Oh. Now, we're looking for...
Never mind.
I was thinking of the ukulele because it's...
Oh, I see. Around. Your favorite instrument.
Well, yes, but although Robert Shaw, say, plays sort of a banjo-lele, which is what George Formby played.
Okay.
Yes.
I'd rather play noughts and crosses with you than take you to the pictures or the zoo. I'm very daft at dancing at moonlight and romancing. I'd rather play noughts and crosses with you. I've never been one for billiards or darts. I'm much too shy to play a game of hearts. At dog tracks or the races, I always lose me braces. I'd rather play noughts and crosses with you. Here am I, a funny sort of guy. I wouldn't dare to hold your hand. Let's begin, maybe I'll let you win. I hope that you understand. Sitting around a table for two, that's the only thing I want to do. There's something cute about you I couldn't do without you. Playing a simple game, tell me you feel the same. I'd rather play noughts and crosses with you. Tic-tac-toe, 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 tic-tac-toe. I'd rather play noughts and crosses with you than take you to a French non-stop review. It may not be so funny, but still it saves me money. I'd rather play noughts and crosses with you. I haven't the manly figure for sports. I never think I look my best in shorts. I lose me breath of biking, and as for that mixed hiking, I'd rather play noughts and crosses with you. One fine day, if luck should come my way, we'll have a little kitchenette. You and me, and when we've had our tea, I hope that you won't forget. Playing at noughts and crosses with you, that's the only way that I can woo. Though now you're far above me, in time you'll learn to love me. Isn't it bold and bad, but I feel a lad, playing at noughts and crosses with you.
The amazing Ralph Shaw is what he calls himself. That's from the CD by George, which of course is a very special performance of George Formby songs. I did like the little kitchenette. Carol, yes. We're going to have our own little kitchenette very shortly.
Yes, we will.
It's been going on for 2 years now, but at least once it got started.
Yes.
He's well on his way. Thank you, Steve. Is he working today?
No.
No. Take the day off, Steve.
He takes the weekend off.
Good man.
Like you other
fresh,
people.
Fresh, for yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
He works Monday to Friday.
And when it's completed, well, I'll let you know. This will be a big party. Well, small glass of wine, perhaps, for Steve. Does he drink?
I don't know.
Well, we've already given him his Hanukkah present.
Yes.
I found this, somebody was giving away a big roll of shrink wrap on the boulevard. Right. And I thought, anyone who could use something like that is probably Steve.
Okay, here's the story. I almost told it yesterday, but then the conversation turned the other direction. My older brother Jim's first job, I think, was driving a truck for Domtar. And through some mystery, I think he got a good deal on wrap. And it was like the stuff you had, it's like saran wrap more than shrink wrap. And he got a gigantic roll of the stuff that was so big that my mom was still using it 30 years later.
Hokey, rokey.
And it was hardly like it was huge.
That's big.
Yeah, it was really
right.
big.
Well,
that roll was really big.
Two things. Time for comedy. It's 6:46.
Okay,
and
good.
Of course, who are we?
I'm ready.
Hi, I'm Chris Hadfield, author of An Astronaut's Guide to Life on Earth. And you're listening to the Saturday morning program on CKUW FM 95.9.
Now, you talked about rap. Well, we've got comedy from Philip Rapp here.
Oh, okay.
I wouldn't call it marriage advice. But it is involved. Don't meet you. Well, you already know. They'll tell us.
Okay.
I just don't understand how two people can dirty so many dishes. Seems like the minute I get through with one stack, there's another. I tell you, John Bickerson, I'm not going to stand for this much longer. Every one of my friends has made at least one day out of it. John Bickerson, how can you fall asleep at the breakfast table?
It ain't easy with all that talking going on. Wake me in 5 minutes, Blanche.
No, you don't. You just get busy and help out.
I'm tired, Blanche.
That's just an excuse. Did you ever see that sweet young couple next door? Now, there's a husband for you. He waits on her hand and foot.
He's an idiot.
He never lets her do anything alone. On Monday, he washed the dishes with her. On Tuesday, he cleaned the silver with her. On Wednesday, he ironed the clothes with her. What do you suppose he did on Thursday?
He mopped up the floor with her.
He did not.
Well, he should have. Listen, Blanche, I got enough problems of my own, and I'm not interested in that stupid couple next door.
Can't even get you to do the simplest chore.
I do plenty.
I begged you to have the electric orange squeezer fixed. Did you take it to the electrician? No.
I didn't have to. I fixed it myself.
How could you fix it? It needed a new motor.
I hooked it up to the vacuum cleaner.
Vacuum cleaner? Does it work?
It works fine. Except it sucks up the juice and spits the pits in your face. What time is it?
You've got plenty of time. I'll have breakfast ready in a minute.
I don't want any more. This oatmeal's plenty.
What oatmeal? Where'd you get oatmeal?
What kind of talk is that? It was on the top of the stove. I ate the whole pot.
That wasn't oatmeal. That was wallpaper paste.
Oh, no.
You promised to paper the bathroom this morning.
Wallpaper paste.
Now, how are you going to put the wallpaper up?
I'll lick it in place. Blanche, how can you worry about wallpaper when I'm practically poisoned?
Oh, you're not poisoned. It's just flour and water. Go take an antidote and I'll whip up a nice omelet.
I'm not hungry anymore.
Don't be like that, John. I've already got the powdered eggs on. Now all I have to do is chop up the turnips and peel the frog legs. It's a wonderful dish.
I'm not eating any powdered frog's legs.
Just taste it. That's all I ask.
Not me. First time I ever saw green eggs.
That's from the skunk cabbage. I got the recipe from my mother.
It looks like your mother.
What did you say?
Nothing. Look, Blanche, I'm just getting tired of these outlandish dishes you keep making.
Like what?
Like that rhubarb pie you made yesterday.
What was the matter with it?
Matter with it? Who ever heard of a pie 2 feet long?
Well, I couldn't get any shorter rhubarb.
Let's have an understanding now, Blanche. I hate rhubarb, and stop making me 7-layer broccoli cakes and sheep soup.
I never made sheep soup in my life. It's good, healthy possum broth.
Possum broth?
Yes, possum broth. Just because I have a little imagination in cooking is no reason you should pick on me.
I'm not picking, Blanche.
Why don't you come out and say it? You hate my cooking.
I don't hate it. I just don't understand it.
You hate it.
I tell you, I don't hate it.
You do.
Don't I eat everything you make?
Then why do you always get ptomaine poisoning?
Then I'll go figure that one out. Blanche, do you mind if I get dressed and go to work?
I don't care what you do. Get dressed.
I will as soon as you finish wiping the dishes with my shirt.
Well, you shouldn't have hung it in the towel rack.
Where else could I hang it? You made me sleep in the kitchen, didn't you?
I didn't know my sister Clara was coming to spend the night, and I can't help it if we only have one bedroom. Fold up your cot.
Find a place to sleep on a cot in the kitchen.
Now, what's wrong with it?
There isn't enough room in here to swing a cat.
You leave the cat alone.
I never touch the cat.
There's plenty of room in here.
There is not.
There is, too. If you'd put the breakfast table on top of the refrigerator and the canary cage in the washing machine, then you could shove the stove in the doorway and you'd have plenty of room for the cot between the sink and the cat's sandbox.
I tried that. The cot's too short. My head lopped over into the sink and that leaky faucet gave me an all-night shampoo.
Well, you should have worn a shower cap. Anyway, Clara's gone now and you won't have to sleep in the kitchen tonight.
Fine.
I felt terrible about her leaving before having any breakfast.
She didn't need any breakfast. She was in here 14 times last night for a snack.
Well, what of it? Nothing disturbs you when you're sleeping.
Well, she did. She had the refrigerator open so much, I woke up with frostbitten feet. Woman eats like a boa constrictor.
Clara doesn't eat because she wants to. Just because she's trying to get rid of her heartburn.
Oh, sure. Where are my shoes?
You're wearing them. You're a fine one to talk about other people stuffing themselves. A man who can't even see his own shoes anymore. Do you want this frog omelet or not?
No. And stop using my pants for a pot holder.
Well, that's what you use them for.
Just leave my pot out of this. I may have a little flab around my waistline, but I don't eat one-tenth as much as your fat sister.
You stop calling her fat. Clara's a glandular case. The doctor says she's an ectomorph with an overactive thyroid.
I don't care. She's a convertible with a hydromatic drive. She eats like she was condemned.
If you say one more word against my sister, I'll never talk to you again.
I wish you wouldn't tempt me that way.
Oh, you pay for that, John Pickerson.
I know it.
You've been tearing down my family since the first day we were married. Never a kind word about any of them.
That's not true. Don't I inquire about the state of your rich uncle's health every day in the week?
You sure do. Every day you say, is the old goat dead yet?
Well, is he?
No. And when he does pass on, you can be sure he won't leave you a penny.
I wouldn't touch it if he did. I may be broke, but I don't want his crooked money. I always wondered how he could travel around Europe on a bank janitor's salary.
He isn't a bank janitor at all. He's one of the shrewdest manipulators in Canada. How do you think he got his title?
What title?
You know as well as I do, my uncle was knighted for his operations in the stock market.
It was the black market. And he wasn't knighted, he was indicted.
He wasn't knighted, he was indicted. The Bickersons, by Philip Rapp, yes, Don Amici, and Francis Langford. Don Amici died on this day in 1993. Dominic Don Amici, American actor, Cocoon, you may remember the movie.
Yes.
And died at the age of 85. He played, well, many, many roles long before that. But he played Alexander Graham Bell, I think, in the movie.
Wow.
And so just as Kleenex has entered the slang, the word, we use that for a tissue paper. So for the telephone, there was a period where people would say, I'll call you on the Don Amici.
Right.
6:54.
Okay.
Christmas is coming. You knew that.
Yes.
The goose is getting fat.
Yes.
My brother, Jack,
yes. Mm-hmm.
Was promised a pony. One year. I think he was promised a pony if he came in first in class, in his class.
Oh, wow.
And he did.
Wow.
There was no pony.
Oh.
And he didn't have a proper, good enough lawyer. Should have gone to Paul Walsh, I think.
Because he was six?
He would have been in 10 or 12 then, I think. I remember it comes.
Okay.
So 20 years later.
Still couldn't afford a lawyer. Yes.
Under the Christmas tree, there's a beat up package. It's kind of dirty and rubbed, etc. And the paper looks a little torn. It's for Jack. So he opens it and. It's a little pony on wheels, you know, the little plastic pony that's...
with a string to pull it
on. Pony. So he eventually got his... What do you need? A pony? Well, probably a pony and an open prairie, I would think.
To Woody Holler and his orchestra. Say, are you repressed, depressed, and generally unimpressed with day-to-day living? Does it seem like there's too much taken and not enough given? Is your pasture green but the cattle's already driven? Well, just sit back and give old Woody Holler a listen.
Let me ride up yonder where the steers are nigh. Just let me wander while the days roll by. Give me a an open prairie and let me ride till my days are done. Yodelay, yodelay,
Haller in his orchestra. And no, he was not surgically altered to sing like that. From his CD, Western Skies. Say, we've been working our way through Capital, the birth of a label. We've talked about a little bit of history of it. This morning, we carry on with born Yvonne Marie Jammet in Mercer's hometown of Savannah, Georgia. 1922. Connie Haynes is her singing name. Sung with Harry James, Tommy Dorsey, prior to her Capital affiliation. She had a hit with Sinatra on the Dorsey classic, Oh, Look at Me Now. Here, on Capital, she scored with her rendition of the Glenn Miller hit, At Last.
Like a song. At last